Dave Consolazio here alongside Kevin KT Taylor for the conference finals week of NFL Beyond the Numbers. KT, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well, sir. I feel like we're exactly where we were last year, a year ago, considering three of the four teams that were in the championship games last year here.
Some things never change.
The NFL just needs to get some parity. I mean, this is ridiculous.
It's funny that it's always preached that there's parity, but it's starting to get to a point where there's not, especially with teams like New England that, despite the fact they haven't won the Super Bowl in a long time,
they're always here.
They're always here. Yeah. If it's not them, it's Pittsburgh. It's always very similar. Yeah. Teams, but here we are again. I was actually thinking to myself, last week I was saying how Seattle would have been the team that I would have value bet if I were in Vegas, and that bet would have gone up in flames in very heartbreaking fashion for me. But I was also thinking a little bit about Baltimore, and they still have quite a ways to go, but that win over Denver, that was certainly the most exciting moment of the playoffs so far, I think.
Yeah, and what amazes me about it is that Denver got two special teams touchdowns, and they still lost. So now when you give Peyton Manning 14 extra points that he didn't have before, how do you lose?
By completely giving up on life in the secondary.
Pretty much. I mean, and what sucks about that game, I think, is that, you know, people are going to see The Peyton Manning interception overtime is going to be replayed 40,000 times.
And it should have never come to that.
It should have never come to that, but not only that, I mean, it's just the fact that the defense, who was so good all year long, and we praised them, and they just had a terrible game, and who would have thought that they would have put up 38 points to any offense? I mean, not even especially, but Baltimore's offense has weapons, but isn't putting up 30 a game on you.
I don't think I've seen just a long ball over the top of a corner and a safety like that at the pro level. I remember it happening in a Washington-Arizona State game a couple years ago, and you see it in college from time to time. There are defensive breakdowns, but for all of the faults of the prevent defense, the point of it in its entirety is up 7 with 50 seconds left when the other team doesn't have any timeouts. Drop everyone back. Don't let somebody get behind you. And just wide open, uncontested. Raheem Moore played that ball about as bad as you could possibly play it.
Yeah.
But it was just a bizarre, like I said, meltdown for a defense that has been good all year. But an interesting turn that in wild card week, all four games went under, and all four games were, I don't want to say boring, but defensive struggles. And then last week, offense just took off. Every single game was a shootout. None of them, all of them had at least 58 points of scoring. The unders weren't even close. Every game was crazy on offense. And so let's jump into what might be another offensive showdown in the first game of the week, and that's Atlanta hosting San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting one for sure. San Francisco scoring 45 last week against Green Bay, just absolutely crushing, especially in the second half when it was tied going into halftime. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Jim Harbaugh when it comes to what he does off the field and how he carries himself and some of the things he says. But when you're talking about on the field, I don't know if there's a better coach right now than Jim Harbaugh. The second half adjustments he made, I mean, they allowed 24 points in the first half. Green Bay got one touchdown at the end of the second half. The defense just absolutely dominated them. And Kaepernick, if he's playing that well and running that wild, I don't know if there's anybody that can beat the 49ers.
Yeah, when you look at Harbaugh, it's hard to say anybody is the best coach or whatever. But when you talk about a tier, there's no tier above him right now. I mean, considering what he's done over the last 2 years with this San Francisco team, now in their second straight NFC Championship game, and now a 4.5-point road favorite in the championship game. Atlanta, if they were feeling disrespected last week, now they have the best record of the remaining teams at 14-3, and they're a 4.5-point home underdog. It's just brutal for the Falcons, and I get it. I get that a lot of people saw what Kaepernick did, saw what San Francisco did, and is going to be on the 49ers here. But I'm actually leaning towards Atlanta in this game. And I think part of it, I'll get into more, and I want to hear what you have to say on this game, but part of it to me really just comes down to the fact that there, in this NFL, isn't a defense for a great passing game. There just isn't. I thought Seattle was well equipped to handle what Atlanta does, but in this NFL, when you have a deep vertical game, look what happened to Denver as well. when you have a deep vertical game and you can just throw that ball 60, 70 yards down the field to these receivers that in man-to-man coverage always seem to make the play. I mean, Julio Jones, Roddy White, these guys always make the catch. Or they get dragged down and it's a 60-yard penalty down the field. No matter how well-equipped your defense is, it just seems like with these passing attacks, there isn't a defense for it.
You're right, and I can't argue it. What concerns me about Atlanta, though, is what we saw last week in Seattle and what we've seen earlier in the year, and I've mentioned it before, is Mike Smith, more than anybody, pulls back the reins when his team has a big lead, and there's no excuse for giving up that lead at home against Seattle. You know, Seattle's offense was going, but why are you just running the clock out on offense when your offense has been doing great the whole time?
And he's been guilty of that all year long.
Exactly, and is that going to change in this game? Let's say the Falcons jump out and they have a 10-14-point lead in the fourth quarter. I'm not comfortable with that at all if I'm an Atlanta fan, because you have to assume Kaepernick leads them down. And then, of course, Turner and Jaquizz Rodgers are not going to get first downs against the San Francisco defense. So Mike Smith has to change something. I remember I tweeted in Facebook that if I think Matt Bryan might have saved Mike Smith's job with that kick.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know if you can fire a coach after a 13-3 season, his second in 3 years. But when you mismanage a game that poorly in the second half and allow a team to make a 20-point comeback in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, really, not even the second half so much as the fourth quarter.
It was 20-0 at the end of the half and 27-7 going into the fourth quarter. Yeah. It was the same thing.
Yeah.
And you almost, and you should have given it up had Matt Ryan not saved you with two great passes and Matt Bryan had a timeout not been called because he missed the first kick.
I don't know that he was really trying on that, but regardless, yeah. The fact that he actually, it might have been. You look at what Marty Schottenheimer, I mean, he consistently had regular season success with the Chargers, and they got rid of him due to lack of playoff success. Didn't work out for him, but the idea was there. The thing, you're 100% right about that factor, that I don't trust this Atlanta team protecting a lead. I also do have trouble figuring out how they're going to contain Kaepernick. Yeah. I mean, it is a major concern, and even just the passing game. But to me, I look at the first three quarters of that game against Seattle, and Atlanta was nothing like they were for most of the year when it came to their rushing defense, their ability to contain a mobile quarterback. Atlanta was completely prepared for that game in a way that I didn't imagine they'd be able to, including their ability to run the ball. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Atlanta run the ball all year. We haven't seen them stop the rush all year. Mm-hmm. And they shut Marshawn Lynch down. They ran the ball effectively to set up those play actions and big plays down the field. A clearly inspired team that, again, I think is going to be inspired this week. And I talked last week about how both teams are inspired, obviously. San Francisco came this close last year. Of course, they're going to be inspired too. But San Francisco, to me, is almost a carbon copy of Seattle. I think they're a better version, but they run, they're a strong rushing team, mm-hmm. they have a good young mobile quarterback, they have a great defense. It's basically the same team, and Atlanta just, for the most part, dominated the same type of team.
It makes it not necessarily easy for them, but they have the same game plan to prepare for, which is good for them, but at the same time, you look at the flip side, and San Francisco saw what they did to prepare for it in the first half, so now they're going to adjust.
Sure. And you could argue Harbaugh's the better coach, but the thing is, you look at San Francisco, the last two games they've played against elite passing teams, they just, now granted this one turned out to not be a game, but they gave up 30-plus to Green Bay, they gave up 30-plus to New England, they won both of those by scoring over 40, that might be the same story here, but I think teams have proven that you can pass on this San Francisco defense. Mm-hmm. And again, like I just said, I don't know that you can't pass on any defense these days just with the way the league protects the quarterback, protects wide receivers with the penalties. Mm-hmm. It's a deep throwing league right now. And I think Atlanta's going to score into the 30s. The question is San Francisco going to score into the 40s?
Which they've shown that they can do multiple times with Kaepernick. One thing that I really like about what Kaepernick is doing, and I don't think enough people have talked about this, is that, you know, we kind of always had, I always at least made a joke about how Michael Crabtree was a really huge disappointment in San Francisco because he was such a monster in college at Texas Tech. You remember that game-winning catch he had against the Texas, I believe it was. And I thought he was going to be a lock to be a star in the NFL, and he was criminally, I don't know if he was underused or just he wasn't making plays with Alex Smith, just wasn't gelling with him, but he never even put up close to Pro Bowl numbers.
Right.
And here with Kaepernick, last week he had a great game. He's been having great games with Kaepernick. So they have something going on, and if Crabtree can have the potential we thought he could in this offense that already has dangerous players with Vernon Davis and Frank Gore, I mean, they could be extremely hard to stop. Anybody could very hard to stop them if they have everybody going at the same time.
Definitely. This is a very scary offense, but I was impressed enough with the way Atlanta played last week for the first three quarters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to hold that Seattle offense that was rolling.
Yeah,
I mean, they
absolutely.
Were rolling coming into that game, and they held them to 7 points for most of the game, and once again, if they don't pull back, like they always seem to, they probably would have just run away with that game. You have to learn from that mistake, I think, now.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, they didn't learn from it during the regular season, but I think we all thought a 20-point lead was safe. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody was really thinking it was going to be a game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sure enough, it ended up being that way. I don't think he makes that mistake again if Atlanta has that kind of lead. I don't think they're going to have that kind of lead.
And it will be interesting to see how Cap deals with the dome, the crowd noise, because he did have his playoff game at home last week. So.
And that could be a massive factor, and you looked at that game and he threw that early interception, and then from there it was smooth sailing, but that sort of play could be the difference in this game. So I don't know. I personally think it's going to be a shootout, and that's no disrespect to San Francisco's defense. I just think Atlanta's offense is capable of that. And I looked at what Atlanta was doing last week through the first three quarters, and every now and then you get a team that just doesn't look like they did during the regular season. And that's what it looked like to me for most of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to thinking about it a little bit and how great of a game Michael Turner had and the rushing game had overall.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to thinking about it, and here's a team that rushed for 87 yards a game during the regular season, didn't rush much at all. And you look at some teams over the years, like a Green Bay, like in New Orleans, that through the regular season they get it done with their passing game, and come the playoffs, their running backs are fresh, and they're ready to have big games like this. I don't know that that's a conscious decision, that you're saving your running back for the entire year to make it to the playoffs, but you got a guy like Michael Turner who has fresh legs because he hasn't done anything all year. You got a guy like Frank Gore who carries the ball 25, 30 times a game. Not saying Atlanta is going to beat San Francisco on the ground.
No,
but Seattle doesn't give up much on the ground either, and they gave up a lot on the ground last week.
It's a fair point, but I think that San Francisco probably has the best front seven in all of the NFL. So it could be interesting, but I think especially if Mike Smith gets in the mode of trying to conserve the game and you know, run it out, I think those are going to be three and outs every time.
Oh, I'm talking about early in the game.
I know what you mean, but
you're right. Late in the game, there's no way he's going to be.
So it sounds like we're on a similar vibe here, but I'm leaning a bit towards San Francisco. You're leaning a bit towards Atlanta. I'm thinking in the air. It should be a great game. I think it's going to be around 35 to 31, but I like San Francisco to pull it out just because of all the things, you know, the offenses, I like both. I'll give the advantage, not even a slight advantage, I'll say a medium advantage, we'll say, to Atlanta's offense. But on the defensive side, you know, I just love San Francisco's defense more than I love any other defense.
That's very fair, and I would say it would even be fair to just say it's a slight advantage because really there's no clear flaw in San Francisco's offense if Kaepernick plays even close to what he played in that one. So I've got a similar score. I'm going to say 35-31 Atlanta, but it should be a really good game.
Let me ask you one more question, not actually related to this, but I'm curious what you think about the Packers last week because, you know, Aaron Rodgers is you know, we talk about how great the quarterbacks are in the league this year, and I think we can both agree that if whenever one of them is playing at their best, I think Aaron Rodgers is the best right now. He is the youngest, which that helps, you know, the Brady.
Are you talking about
of all them. You look at Aaron Rodgers now, and he's 1-2 in his last three playoff games. The two losses were blowouts. You know, the first half was close last week, but it was a blowout in the end, of all things. And last year against the Giants. The one victory was against the Minnesota Vikings team that didn't have a starting quarterback. It was starting a guy who played three games his whole career. What do you make of that from Aaron Rodgers? That he's 1-2 in his last three playoff games, and the one win was against a bad team, or, you know, with a quarterback that was bad.
Well, I make nothing of it personally, because to me, I look at the game and the quarterback performance as opposed to the record. Because the win-loss, in the end, it's all that matters, especially in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're trying to grade one position in an entire game, you kind of look at it and say, is he the reason they lost, or is he the reason they weren't in a position to win? And I just can't begin to say that for this game. I can't say it for a couple years ago in that Arizona game. When this team loses, it tends to be because of defensive meltdowns as opposed to him. Well, a quarterback like Peyton Manning, you need to start having that conversation because he has a losing record over a lot of playoff games over the course of his career, and he's gone into some cold weather games, and he actually played quite well. He wasn't the reason they lost last week.
No, but
I'm saying in general, he's gone into some cold weather games, thrown two picks, only had one touchdown or no touchdowns, and been the problem. I haven't seen Rodgers be the problem, and that's how I personally feel about it. I'm more interested in performance, not even stats, so much as performance. Mm-hmm. And I've never said, man, Rodgers blew this game, at least not that I can think of. And I have said that about Peyton in the past.
Yeah.
Brady did not play well against Baltimore last year. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's more about performance for me. And Aaron Rodgers, for me, is never the problem. But if this keeps up, it's
clearly the defense was the issue last week and was, you know, for the past. But it's interesting to me, and I'm not concerned necessarily if I'm a Green Bay fan, but last year against New York, I mean, the offense really struggled. They only put up, I think, 17 points. And I've said this a bunch. I'm going to beat it at horse again. You know, the possessions were extended because of bad referee calls.
That was.
So he played, you know, his stats-wise, he might have been okay. But points-wise, he played poorly last year. And then, you know, to be completely shut out until the last possession of the second half is a big concern, I think. That is of great adjustments, of course, by Jim Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't know if it's not adjustments on the offensive side in time, but, you know, to disappear for the second half of a playoff game without putting only points up to the last possession, that's a concern, I think.
That's fair. I mean, the last two playoff losses now did not look good, especially the Giants game, but you're talking about two outstanding defenses. I mean, when the Giants were playing last year, they were playing at the highest level, and when that team gets going with that pressure up front, and then you just said San Francisco, one of the best front sevens in the game, the quarterback pressure they're able to get, and Green Bay's offensive line has been an issue for years
now.
That's
true.
So it's a mixed bag. You can't put it all on one guy.
Sure.
But it is a fair question, and maybe I'm giving him too much of a pass just because of that Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But that's how it tends to work. I think when you win a championship, you get a couple of years.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about that for Tom Coughlin, actually. So they missed the playoffs. If they miss the playoffs again next year, do we fire him again? Or I think it's a 3-year window after you win a Super Bowl. So I'm going to give Rodgers one more year. But look at Matt Ryan. Until this week, Matt Ryan's performances have been very forgettable, so I'm still not quite ready to put him in the in the playoff failure, but he's trending in the wrong direction. So another guy, I don't want to say he's trending in the wrong direction, but you mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast. It's been 8 years since the Patriots have won the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady has done just fine during the regular season, just fine through most of the playoffs, but in his two Super Bowl performances, didn't get the job done. I didn't like his game against Baltimore last year. He's obviously not a problem. He's one of the great quarterbacks of all time, and he's doing okay for himself. But here's another guy that, for his legacy's sake, I think needs to get one more of these things. He can't go out with 10 straight losses, I don't think.
Yeah, it's interesting because it seems like every time they've lost, it's been for something else. It hasn't necessarily been any. And even last year, you remember he had that pass to Wes Welker that might have just been a couple inches too far outside.
That's being generous.
He should still have caught it for Wes Welker, but he did have to go, you know, opposite of his body. The pass was in there. If they catch that, the game should be over.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just always been a play or two with the Patriots. They've never been blown out in the playoffs.
No.
It's always been, you know, a couple plays here and there. And I'm really excited for this game. I actually, because I'm going to be in Vegas, I'm going to be with friends. So, and I'm the only one that really cares about football that's going to be there. So I've told them that.
You say, run along, everybody.
Well, here's what I've said. I've said, I'll give you guys the NFC Championship because I don't really have a strong rooting preference either one. I don't really care who wins that
Fair
game.
Enough.
But give me the Baltimore-New England game. I'm going to be in the sportsbook for that one. I'm going to watch that one because I really want to see what happens here. I really personally want Baltimore to win, not only because, everybody in the world hates the Patriots, kind of including me, but
sure.
After last year where Baltimore, you know, had that, they fought, and I think everybody agrees pretty much outplayed New England on both sides of the ball, and to have it come down to that field goal, which is heartbreaking. I've been saying this whole week that what I want to happen is that New England is down by three at the end, they drive down, they miss the game-tying field goal, and Baltimore goes to the Super Bowl. That would just be a complete full circle.
Gostkowski just devastated again.
You know, but that's what I hope will happen. What I think will happen is I think the Patriots, even without Rob Gronkowski, they're just so good this year. And we said it last week, and it showed, and we're going to say it again this week, I'm sure, that they have that running game now, and they have the defense. I mean, Shane Vereen comes out of nowhere and gets three touchdowns. Who's it going to be this week? You know, somebody's going to have a huge game mm-hmm. that Baltimore couldn't have planned for because they just have so many weapons. So that'll be interesting to see. And with Baltimore, the huge win last week, you know, the Ray Lewis emotion still rode through, and it probably will through this week. You'd have to imagine. It's a very interesting matchup. I can't wait to see what happens.
Let's look at Baltimore against they get Ray Lewis back. They go into the playoffs 1-4, and both straight up and against the spread. They did not look good. You mentioned that people were saying that they were the worst division winner. Obviously, probably not worse than the 7-9 Seahawks, yeah. But one of the worst we've seen in the last 5 years.
Your winning record, we'll say. How about that?
There you go. Perfect. They went into the playoffs as cold as it gets. They get Ray Lewis back. He announces his retirement. Dominate the Colts. Huge upset last week. Yeah. And like you mentioned, it was two special teams touchdowns. The defense against a very strong offense did only give up 21 points. So now you look at Baltimore's history against New England.
They play them well.
They always play them close. It's been New England. The New England is 4-2 over the last six. Baltimore just won the last one, but New England, of course, won in the AFC Championship. But 7 of the last 8 games that Baltimore's played against New England, they've held them to 27 points or less. Mm-hmm. And then last time it was 30 points. So they haven't been run all over like a lot of other teams have against New England. And all 6 of the last 6 games between these two teams have been decided by 6 points or less, with one exception. That was when Baltimore went into New England and beat them bad. In wild card week, mm-hmm. Back in, I believe it was 2008. So 5 games that were decided by 6 points or less, 1 Baltimore blowout. I don't understand this spread being at 9 points for
That's
New
ridiculous.
England. I kind of feel like, for one thing, I don't think bookmakers or fans know what to do with this New England team. They're mm-hmm. so lethal on offense. You just kind of throw a number out there and hope it sticks. But I think the other concern would be the fact that New England's defense, like we were talking about, has been playing well. Now, granted, they ended up giving up 28 points to Houston, but that was
too late,
garbage
yeah.
time. They played well against Houston. Through December, the defense played well, with the exception of that San Francisco game. 3 of Baltimore's touchdowns were gifts. Just gifts. And I'm not saying that they're not capable of getting big plays down the field. They are with this wide receiving tandem. Again, I was just talking about when you have a great wide receiving tandem, mm-hmm. there's not much of a defense for it. But I just don't know that they're going to see those kind of plays with the regularity they did in that game. So maybe that's where the spread is coming from. They're thinking New England gets to 30, 35 like they always do, and those plays aren't there. But I don't see it. I don't see how this game isn't decided by a touchdown or less yeah. either way.
No, I agree completely. And what's funny is that Joe Flacco always talks about wanting to be elite, and I don't think anybody's really comfortable putting him in there just because during the regular season he does disappear, and they had that 1-4 stretch to the end. But Flacco can play in January. This guy gets stuff done in the playoffs.
In his entire career, he's never not won a game in the playoffs.
His entire career, and last year outplayed Brady. It's not his fault that Lee Evans can't hold on to the perfectly thrown ball for the touchdown that Billy Cundiff misses the field goal.
Yep.
He put his team in a position to win, and they probably should have won the game.
They absolutely should have won the game.
So you have to show Flacco, and then I understand that it was terribly played on defense, that Hail Mary, but the 60-yard bomb right on the money for
yeah.
Flacco. A perfect pass. And the same ones to Torrey Smith where he had to make a play and Dow jump him. But Flacco knows where to put the ball. Let's just put it that way. So I love Joe Flacco in this matchup, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he stays step for step and maybe outplays Brady again. It's just a matter of, do the Patriots get a couple breaks here and there that they tend to do, you know, and not because they're lucky or because they're favored, just because they do, you know, make those kind of plays. I think they might get a couple breaks, but over a touchdown. I love Baltimore to keep it close and maybe pull it off, although it's really hard to go against the Patriots. I mean, they just dominated Houston last week. And the one playoff game they've had, it was a crushing win at home.
Right.
And now they're home again, so it's hard to pick against them.
Yeah, the nice thing, you've got Flacco, who not only is a proven winner in the postseason, but isn't afraid to go on the road. Here's a guy throughout the beginning of his career, every year it was a wild card road game that he was picking up those wins in. And it's a really valid point. Everybody's going to talk about the blown coverage, and I just did, and I believe that was the case. But I think back to the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game where Roethlisberger had the tiniest of windows to throw it into, and it was a tiny window for a reason. He didn't get it through. The ball was picked off. Cincinnati ended up winning the game.
Yeah.
It had to be a perfect throw because more was coming. If it was underthrown a bit, it would have been picked off. If it was overthrown, it's out of bounds. It was a perfect throw, and you do have to give him credit for that. I think this one will probably end up being a kind of a shootout as well, but I actually think the other game is going to be more high scoring.
Yeah.
This game, you know, like I said, I think Baltimore's defense, people are going to look at that 35 and say they didn't have a good game, but a lot of it was special teams, and by and large, they did an okay job. You'd like to see them hold Denver to a field goal or two, but it is Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. Then again, it is Tom Brady. It's going to be a tough game for both defenses because Baltimore, when Flacco is playing well, and when they're actually getting Rice involved, which they did last week, sometimes they forget about him, and I think that's half the reason why they struggle in the regular season sometimes.
Definitely.
But when the playoffs roll around, these guys get rolling. Both these offenses are capable. I think this is a much closer game than people are giving it credit for. And I think people forget, it's not like New England. This isn't 2007, where New England has steamrolled everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, New England has played some close games. There, not of course, Baltimore during the regular season had its faults, but I'm saying New England, if a team will stand up and play them on defense, you can slow this team down. You can hold it under 30.
Mm-hmm.
But in the playoffs, you know this team has a chip on its shoulder. You know Baltimore's playing for Ray and everything. It's just a lot of energy and emotion in this game. I actually think it could go either way. I love the plus nine.
Sure.
As far as actually making a pick, I'm probably with you that picking against New England at home is just too difficult.
Yeah.
But
it's negative EV.
It is negative EV, but expected value for you non-poker players out there. But it is probably, like, it's closer than people expect, I think.
Yeah, definitely. We'll see what happens. I can't wait to see what happens. I really want Baltimore to pull it out, and, you know, they did beat them earlier this year. These are two different teams, and New England has lost one game since Halloween, which is pretty impressive.
Definitely.
You know, I said at the end of my preview on Sports Invasion, I said my heart says Baltimore, my head says New England. Oftentimes, I'll say you got to go with your heart over your head. When it comes to picking and betting sports, go with your head, because more often than not, you're going to be right. So I think New England wins this. I agree with you. It's a shootout, a little less. My score line is 30-24. Could be closer, but I love New England. I love Baltimore to cover the spread for sure.
That's actually about right where I'm at with this one as well. So it sounds like we're pretty much on the same page again. I'll ask you a question since you asked me one at the
end
there.
Please, go for it.
Once again, about Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if you saw his comments this morning, but he was saying that the read option is a phase that is eventually going to be weeded out. He was saying that, or he said basically that NFL defenses will catch up to it. Mm-hmm. He said the mobile quarterback isn't a phase. That, you know, the mobile quarterback is here to stay, a guy that can make his plays with his legs. But the read option that's been torching teams isn't going to last in the NFL. Agree or disagree?
That's interesting, actually. I hadn't heard that before. It's tough to say because, you know, Cam Newton and Kaepernick.
To clarify, sorry to cut you off. He did compare it to the Wildcat and was saying 5 years ago, the Wildcat was all over the place.
In my head, I was thinking, you know, the option, for example, in college.
Sure.
Yeah, and the Wildcat has kind of phased out. But at the same time, that's a running back playing quarterback.
Definitely a different thing, I think.
I think when you have guys like, you look at Cam Newton, you know, Kaepernick and Russell Wilson, these guys are just now starting their careers and they're already so effective. Of course, people can adapt to them, but then they will adapt to the defense.
Right.
So I think it's something that won't be as explosive as it is now. I think people will adjust to it. As far as it almost completely phasing out as the Wildcat has, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that there's enough talent in the quarterbacking core that's using it that it won't phase out completely. I think it'll be less, but they'll definitely still be using it, I think, in a few years for sure.
Yeah, I think where Rodgers is wrong is like when you compare it to the Wildcat actually, I believe still does have a place in the NFL, and I just think that because it hasn't worked for a couple teams, now people are starting to phase it out because it's a copycat league. I think there's still a place for it, but what differentiates the read option with the Wildcat, like you said, you have a running back that might be able to throw, or you have a backup quarterback that is capable of throwing, like a Tebow, but you know it's going to be a running play. And so it used to catch defenses off guard, now it doesn't. With the read option, it's specifically designed to read the defense. Yeah. And so the idea is if you've got a quarterback that knows what he's doing and is able to make those reads, not everybody can. Mm-hmm. It's actually an interesting debate with the Chip Kelly hiring in Philadelphia. That's going to be a very interesting experiment. Athletically, it makes perfect sense. Mike Vick seems like the perfect fit for that kind of offense, but being able to, he never ran a read option in college, and he's always been a mobile quarterback, but he's never run the read option. It is a talent that not everybody has, but if you're able as a quarterback to drop back and know that you have options and look at what the defense is giving you and take it, that's the quarterback position. That's always been the quarterback position, except when you're a Rodgers or a Brady or a Manning, you're taking what the defense gives you and throwing the ball to that spot. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about taking what the defense gives you, throwing to that spot, or running when they don't. Yeah. So you're just adding another element to the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. I really don't see the defense for it. I mean, I think a guy like Cam Newton definitely needs to mature. That's the big difference. There's a lot of differences between him and Griffin III, but Cam Newton, for example, he has the arm strength and the raw talent, I think, to be the best quarterback in the league. Maturity is a problem for him,
sure,
both after the game and on the field. But when that guy is clicking and he's able to beat you both with his arm and on the ground, that is the future of the league. There's never not going to be a place for a great quarterback that can carve you up with his arm, mm-hmm. but one that can carve you up with his legs, too, all the better.
Yeah, especially, I didn't mention RG3 in there, so there's
that just goes to show you how much of a threat these guys are.
I definitely agree because, you know, as I mentioned before, the Wildcat just has two options, really, to deal with. Occasionally a third, but it's never dealt with. This has four options. They might even find a way to involve a receiver on a reverse or something, you know, like this. There's a lot of options. I don't think it's even explored fully yet in the NFL.
I think
there's more options that you could bring in there, so it's an exciting thing to keep an eye on, and I think it's evident when you look at the fact that the Seahawks made the playoffs and the Redskins made the playoffs, and you know the Panthers aren't there, but they have a lot of holes and everywhere else. So if they can build that up, I think Cam could definitely lead them there. So it's definitely something interesting that I'll keep my eye on for.
But yeah, you did have this very telling battle of Aaron Rodgers, who you just mentioned, when he's on, might be the best drop back passer in the game, mm-hmm. and one of these up and comers, and the up and comer crushed him. 444 total yards, 4 touchdowns. It wasn't even close.
No.
And some of that's Harbaugh, some of that's the Green Bay defense, but that was a big statement for the mobile quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think defenses will find a way to start assigning, say, a spy and say, let's not let him break. I mean, when Kaepernick took off, he wasn't ever going to be touched.
No.
That sort of play needs to be stopped. You have to have somebody spying for that sort of thing. But as far as those 7-8 yards carving you down the field, I don't know that there's a great defense for that. And it's not something, even if you call the right play on defense, if the quarterback reads it correctly and adapts, what can you do?
Breaks a tackle, yeah.
Same with Peyton Manning. That's what he's been doing. Good luck trying to call the right play on that guy.
Yep.
Hopefully you'll get a 70-yard uncontested throw down the field to win it late. So we'll see what happens. Have a good time in Vegas. I like that. I like conceding the NFC Championship to bring home the one that counts.
I got to make him happy, right?
Yeah, you are a true gentleman. So. As always, you can email me at VegasDavesDime@gmail.com.
Or me at KevinJTAY@gmail.com. You can catch this podcast and all things sports at sportsinvasion.net.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. Enjoy the conference championship games, and we'll see you next week for the Super Bowl.
Thanks, guys.